This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Bob Stewart,
Bruce Markwell,
and I'm Stuart Perks.
Bob, I would just like to ask you, now having listened to two or three now, I think it is, recordings, you spent some time in the US and in Canada, and I would just like to know what you found as the differences between those two groups of people, because they are very close and do a lot together, and but obviously it's a bit like Australia and New Zealand. There are differences and there must be competition. Could you just elaborate?
Sure. Well, it's been a big part of my life, really, the US and Canada. I've had many, many wonderful opportunities there. And I think that coming out of my secondary education, which was not as life-enhancing as I would have liked, it was a gift from God, if you like, that to get this AFS International Scholarship, which I got at 17 years of age, and went to the state of Wisconsin, small town, 6,000 people, and was hosted by a local family and attended the local high school. And a very different atmosphere. It was co-ed for a start, which was made things interesting. And it's really gone on from there. I came out of it with a much more optimistic a view of what life could hold for me than I had got from what I almost regarded as a borstal, an expensive borstal, Christ College, that I attended. And I don't mind having that on the record. I have to say, interestingly, that I wrote of my experiences to the Board of Governors, the Chairman of the Board of Governors of Christ College, and I put it all down in very clear detail what my beef was with the experience I was subjected to. And I, in fairness to the gentleman concerned, he wrote a very accepting letter. He said, you know, we don't try and defend ourselves. We got it wrong, and we try and do better these days. I thought that was a very promising kind of response.
So what were your criticisms?
Well, all sorts of things. I don't want to get too stuck on that, but basically the all sorts of things, really. It was just having later studied developmental psychology, you know, that was a revelation to me to see all the things that had been done. It was the notion that basically students there were sort of units that were interchangeable, and they could be pretty much treated in the same way. You didn't really need to bother to get to know them very much, because they had to conform to what was the superior experience of that institution. The absence of encouragement, which was virtually, apart from one teacher, was the only teacher that I got any encouragement from at all. Some of the teachers, one of the teachers, the math teacher, for example, used to put people in order of their results of the latest test. And what we know from even basic social psychology and developmental psychology is that if you give people labels and sit them on the back of the class as being stupid, then they probably will continue to be stupid. It's not a very... Basically, one of the clearest messages that we get from behavioural psychology is that people tend to repeat things for which they get a good consequence. So if something nice happens when you do something, you're more likely to repeat it. And it's not just human beings, it's flatworms, it's cats, it's horses. It's not rocket science. But they hadn't heard of that. They didn't obviously understand that when I was there.
Well, I'd say it was rewarding them for getting the question right.
What making them feel superior?
If you have them in a row, you got the question right, you move up. So that's a pat on the back.
Nice for the people in the front. But most of the people were either mediocre or were at the back. And so what you actually try to do if you're a teacher is encourage all the diversity of personality and ability in the class. That's what you do. You don't just pick out a few little favoured ones and say they're good people and the rest are stupid. So that's just an example. They didn't actually understand how people, young people, learn. They really, I mean, I actually don't feel it's very profitable to go on talking about that, but also the whole thing about corporal punishment, obviously we've moved on from that, and that is brilliant, but the concept really was that parents shouldn't really value their own insights about what their children should do. They should bow to what authorities tell them should be done with their youngsters. That was the ethos at that time.
And that doesn't apply now?
And well, it applies to a lesser extent, but it applied in an extreme manner. And I've had many examples of, for example, of some account where a child was in hospital and some well-meaning relative had said, oh, don't go and visit them, it'll only upset them, and that sort of notion. And the parent would override his or her natural inclination to go and be at the side of their child because some authority, whether it was the medical doctor or whether it was the headmaster or the headmistress or whatever. And it was a sort of authoritarianism that you believe someone else knows better about how I run my life and how I look after my children. Mm. And it was so pervasive when I look back. It was a sick environment. Now, there were some, the people, as you pointed out, some people actually were fine. If you're chairman, if you're on the first 15, you're a head prefect, you know, it's a whole wonderful experience.
Mm.
But the school should be more than just a wonderful experience for a tiny minority.
Mm.
It should actually be a growth-inducing experience, which they should enjoy. Mm. What's wrong with enjoying stuff?
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's actually common sense. It's not sort of abstruse psychology. It's the way human beings are. They tend to repeat things if they get something nice happen to them. Well, why wouldn't you use that in education?
Hmm.
Why would an expensive rip-off school like Christ College take the money and be fraudulent? Because that's what they are. It's like a doctor acting, dispensing fraudulent medicine. They actually are accountable for that.
Hmm.
And as we were saying before, I'm quite happy to have on record that I have been in touch with Christ College about what I suffered at that time, and many, many others who are.
Is this
silent.
A sort of Me Too thing that's not come to the surface yet?
The Me Too.
You know, the Me Too, global Me Too thing going on about people say the abuse that.
I'm sure. I think. I mean, I've certainly talked to a number of old boys, and you know, had similar experiences, but I wanted to put on record in defense of Christ College nowadays is that the chairman of the board of governors did acknowledge that mistakes had been made, that they have attempted to change the environment. I've got a young relative who's there and he seems to be doing well, and so if they've changed, that is brilliant. I'm very happy with that.
to play devil's advocate,
yes.
Can you go too far the other way so no one's allowed to feel they've failed or they've been challenged, and so then they go out in the world and they don't do well enough, yes. and they can't cope with it?
I think the thing is that failure is part of the human condition, and what people need to do is work out how you deal with failure, because you're not going to get anywhere if you can't do that. And one of the ways is that you develop methods of saying, okay, I screwed up, focusing more on how you would redo what it is that you screwed up, rather than, oh, I'm a worthless son of a bitch kind of thing. That's the important thing. So what a good teacher can do is help people to become smarter at how to deal with the stuff that life will throw at them, because it throws into everyone gets the stuff thrown at them.
If I could just come back to where we were originally, we were talking about the difference between Canada and American people.
Yeah, we got a bit sidetracked.
We had got a little sidetracked, but it was worth it, and it sort of gives a little bit about where you're coming from. So
sure.
So thank you.
But well, I think that really getting back to that, the optimism, the sort of that I experienced. For example, I wasn't that keen on sport at Christ College. Well, I became a backstroke expert there. I mean, that wasn't me at all. I won all the backstroke things. And how the heck that happened? But stuff like that happened to me.
Because it's sport when you're lying down, you see. It makes it a lot easier.
Maybe it's a sort of lazy person's sport or something.
Well, it's like they said about New Zealand in the Olympics. They got all the medals in sports where you can be sitting down. You know,
like, yes. But I just like the optimism. Not that it's always optimistic, but there is a sort of can-do attitude. And basically, I had the most wonderful privilege of going to Harvard University, which, considering my passion in psychology, I mean, I just had virtually all the greats were there. And that made... it was absolutely pivotal, because I was then able to do a PhD, which just grew right out of that, and it's given me a wonderful career in social psychology and personality. But it also led to my establishing a journal, international journal in that field.
Just before we go on to that, which is what I was going to touch on as well, what about the social side of life in America, quite different from and Canada, quite different from New Zealand?
And
you were in co-ed school for the first time.
Yes, well, that had its attractions, I must say. And actually, it was quite amusing, because I had, when I brought it back to my uncle, I was showing some of my slides from the thing, and there were some very beautiful young women or girls in the courtyard. And I said, oh, here's some of the students in the courtyard. And he said, you mean the courting yard? but no, they were, that was good. Actually, it's one of my points is that there are certain things that you need to do at every stage of your life, and they're different. And the things that adolescents have to do is get to know something about the opposite sex. Well, what kind of sense does it make to actually give them single-sex schools? Mm. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's supposed to be one of the things that they're learning. And likewise, in early adulthood, obviously learning intimacy in terms of a new relationship and all the things that go with early adulthood. And there are various what they call developmental tasks at each stage. And I did a study really on New Zealand education, secondary education, in relation to what it should be done given the nature of adolescence. And it did not, the scorecard was not very good at that time. I think it's a lot better now than it was. And for a place like a sort of antediluvian place like Christ College in those days, it was basically a fail, not to put too fine a point on it. But as I say, hope springs eternal in the human breast, and things are better, I'm assured. Not just Christ College, but there are a lot of these schools were like that. The sort of muscular Christianity schools, even the sort of Christchurch Boys High or Point Palms North Boys High, they were all pretty much the same kind of same old, at the time.
There's a big body of literature, though, isn't there, about whether either boys or girls do better in same-sex or co-ed schools, and a lot is saying girls academically don't perform so well in co-ed schools?
Yes, that's just taking the one narrow academic criteria. And really, when you look at what adolescents are really, what you need to do as an adolescent, that's important, because it leads you to, getting into your right vocational future. But really, it's being used in a spurious way to justify behaviours by teachers and schools which are totally inappropriate given the nature of the people, the age and the people that they're dealing with. Yeah. And I mean, I speak as, I'm speaking really from the world's experts on this, people who actually do know. And I think that education has to be done professionally, just as medicine has to be done professionally. And you have to do it by getting the best scientific information to illuminate your practice.
So you'd say there's a consensus. So you think now there's a consensus among the experts against same-sex schools?
Some would argue, obviously, that as you do. I would by and large dispute that. I don't believe that the actual scientific evidence supports that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just raising the existence of a position, wondering where it stands.
Okay, Bob, now if we could just come back, after your time in Canada and the States, or States and Canada, whichever way it goes around, you came back to New Zealand, and you found yourself a little bit unemployed, if you like, and you went on to the council.
Right. Prior to that, of course, I came back to USP. I had my USP.
That's University of the South Pacific.
University of the South Pacific.
Oh, okay, yes, sure.
And then eventually, near my 50th birthday, I came back to New Zealand. I did have my journal, which I had established, and did provide a reasonable income from that. I did have my pension. But I had also been quite involved in administration at the University of, obviously, as acting head vice chancellor. And I had a real interest in how organisations work, and that was primarily a big motivator in terms of giving local body politics a go, and I really found I was involved on the economic side, and we did some interesting things for Palmerston North, which I think were really, really worthwhile. I mean, for example, we built the Regent, we did got the Regent going, we fought a big battle about four-laning the Fitzherbert Avenue, which was resisted by many people. Looking back, I think most people would say that if we had only got one lane each way, we would have a lot of trouble.
Oh, yes, no question about that.
And we also have perfectly good trees. I mean, yes, it was terrible to have to cut down the trees at the time. And I can still remember being in Fitzherbert Avenue and hearing a voice, and I didn't know where the voice was coming from, and it turned out was a lady up a tree, one of the trees in Fitzherbert Avenue, and she was abusing me because I was a councillor.
And well, Mark Bell Booth was behind that, that as well, wasn't he?
That's right. Yeah. And he was he was actually a neighbour of a house where I owned a house there. So anyway, my words to her were, I'm sorry, I don't speak to people in trees, which didn't go down that well, actually, I have to say. With
you were reported in the press.
To a certain extent, that was handled badly from an information point of view, because they were just going to cut down the trees. They didn't say that we were going to plant other ones further closer to the footpath and so forth,
yes,
to make it four lanes. And I think it would have been more accessible,
yes,
to the public, or understandable for the public if they had said that more trees were going to, or the same sort of trees were going
well,
to
replace. Well, they did say so, but they didn't want to hear it, I think.
Is
some
that
of them.
Right, yeah.
It
certainly didn't get the publicity.
No, it didn't. It probably... I think people tend to sometimes hear what they want to hear,
yep,
don't they?
You've mentioned about this journal. I'm a little bit intrigued. What is this journal about?
The listeners can't see it, but basically I'm just holding up a scientific journal hard copy.
That's an A5, is it?
Yeah, it's an A5. And it's basically... It's called Social Behaviour and Personality, an International Journal.
And it's been going for...
50 years this year. And I started it at Massey University when I was a lecturer there. And it's basically an opportunity for people in that field to publish their research. We accept about 17%. So it's fairly competitive to get your work published in it.
From where?
From probably close to 40 countries, and it's read in 160 countries, mainly the United States. But it's all online now. This is this goes back to 2018.
So you must get a certain amount of it handed in foreign language, and it's got to be translated, or does it always have to be in
English?
It's
all in English. Everything's in English. Mm. No. And we have a team of about 15 people who are all sorts of skills, you know, web skills, a lot of copy editors, data entry sort of people, you know, and also, but mainly people, we actually hire part-time people, PhDs in the field. So they do, most scientific journals do peer reviewing, which is sending them out to people in the field and then getting, maybe a couple of views on whether to publish it or not, or what, if so, what to change, how to change it.
And just also to make sure it's factual, not...
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's got to be a lot of things, obviously, but it's got to be basically following the accepted, approaches to... research in the field and use the right statistics, and obviously, given most of them are English is not their first language, it's quite a challenge for them to write in English. I mean, for goodness sake, I mean, most actually right now the majority of them are from mainland China, and I wouldn't like to write a scientific article in Mandarin.
I edited an international health economics journal, and we had the same problem, but it meant we put a lot of time into working on the presentation and the wording. Is that something you do, or you say, sorry, English?
We do. They typically employ, most of them have got a, you know, they can correspond in English and so on, but they do employ translators, which we encourage, and we suggest we've got deals with certain ones that they can approach, but obviously there's still a huge gulf in many cases, and even for really good research that you've got to help them with, and that's where our copy editors come in, you know, and they do a brilliant job with helping them, you know, to, and really
that's partly they pay a fee for the articles, and that covers the cost of
which is paid out of their research grants in the main, and but that's fairly well established, and basically the trend is toward open access And we are...
Which means?
Which means everyone on the face of the planet can have access freely to the research, which is what we have with Google, you know, the internet.
So basically, free access online. So they, access online. All they need is an internet connection and they can access.
That's right. But in the past, it's been, you know, you've got to actually, there's a pay barrier.
Yeah, paywalls. Yeah.
Paywall. And so we're now about 93% funded by research grants that the contributors have and so on. And so there's still a little bit which is based on subscriptions and copyright.
Do you charge on submission or on acceptance?
Only on acceptance, yeah. Yeah, it's free online. There's very detailed instructions about how to submit the articles and formats. And
can you give some indication what the charge would be? Is it per page, per thousand words, or per article?
It's not cheap. I think it's in US dollars. It would probably be a couple of hundred dollars a pay for 500 words. Yeah, something like that. Mm. And it's reflective of the big job that we have in terms of actually getting it to a really acceptable standard in terms of employment and you know, just all of the sorts of things.
So when you started this journal off, you was doing it on your own or... then it's grown to about 10.
Well, interestingly, actually, when I was in the States, I met someone who had started their own journal, and it sort of started picking things up. And I wrote to a well-known publisher, Plenum Publishers, in New York and London, and proposed a journal in personality, which I did. Julie edited, and it was published by them in New York for 2 years, but they didn't have the same model and they discontinued it after 2 years, and whereupon I thought, well, look, I know I could get a different model in doing this, and I know these people are supposed to be experts, but basically I've run this thing for 50 years.
Thank you for listening to Manuatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.